Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 23rd, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm a very sick Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a very happy Scott Long that I'm nowhere near you. Are diseases communicable over Skype?
They may be. It's a real experience, so you never know. Yeah, they have smell-o-vision coming out, so they may have virus vision.
I promise you, I don't want to smell you right now.
Man, you do not. You know, and you'll be carrying me more than ever on this show. I've got my hand hovering on the mute button. I don't know what it is. I just cannot shake this virus.
Boy, that sounds like an 80s hit. Huey Lewis in the News did that?
Solid gold.
Well, hey, it's a very happy occasion here at Ante Up for everybody that's healthy. Because we had our Restock the Shelves event on Monday. And actually, we had some other events either before and after as well, too. But Monday was a big day. And we're still getting some more reports. It's taken a while for some folks to let us know and count up all the food and money they collected. But I can tell you, one venue alone, and we were in more than two dozen venues across North America, one venue alone reported receiving enough donations to create more than 4,000 meals.
Jeez, that's awesome.
Isn't that?
That's unbelievably awesome.
4,000 meals!
Man, that's awesome.
Next time your friend says poker players are terrible human beings, you tell them about the 4,000 meals at one venue.
One place. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so we're still totaling it up now, but it's been so great to see the emails and the text and the tweets come in with photos of just stacks and stacks of cans and happy people smiling and all the cool things that some of the poker rooms did to encourage, you know, giving extra chips or drawing tickets or other things along those lines. Some of the things that our volunteers did. Today I just heard because we were pounding the pavement trying to get folks to represent Ante Up at some of these events, right? And we came short in a couple of them, but we had a couple folks that we've never even met that emailed us and said, "Hey, I'd love to represent Ante Up at an event." And one of them today, the poker manager said, "Oh, she was a joy. She was out there. She was chatting up a player. She was selling raffle tickets. And that venue there, they sold $1,000 in raffle tickets."
Awesome.
That all went to the local food bank. So everybody really got into it. Very, very excited. And definitely doing this again next year, January 18th, 2016. So mark your calendar. If you weren't able to participate this year, please participate next year. And really, there's nothing stopping you from donating food at any point during the year to people in need. Just a great, great event.
I think I'm already starting to feel better. Hearing that good news made me feel better.
And the other kind of fun thing that we kind of did with this is, you know, because this was a joint effort between us and Blue Shark Optics and our good friend Carrie Alsis that owns the company, right? And as we're talking about it, he's like, you know, we should do it last longer at each of these events. And I'm like, that's perfect. So, you know, some of the events we had reps for both of us and we could do it, and some we didn't. But he and I both went out to Tampa Bay Downs and played there. And so our side bet was whoever got knocked out first had to make a $100 donation to the Maddie Williams Neighborhood Family Center. And I was telling the representatives of the charity there, because they were there when we were talking about this, and I'm like, I'm sitting on my chips. You guys better stay here all night, because I don't know when Gary's going out, but I'm not going out before him. And so I kept looking over. He's at our table, right? And I think we had 80, almost 90 players in this tournament. And when we got down to three tables, he finally moved to my table. And I'm like, this is what's going to happen, right? And he moved all in. Unfortunately, the cards were not favorable to him. He went out, gave me a hundy to give to the charity, walked out. Two hands later, I'm walking out.
Classic.
I dropped the money off and a lot of other food that was collected after the charity left the next day, and just to see the reaction of the charity and much money and you know, the good we did here for our local community. I told Gary, hey, I gave him an extra 100 for me as well too. So we did really good work here locally and all across the country, and I know my good friend Chris here is going to do a really nice design for us in the next magazine, showing all the photos and information from all the folks that took some time out of their day on Monday to do a lot of good for the communities.
Absolutely. It's a big thing. It's very important to me that this is successful, too, and can't wait to really see all the photos, because I'm creating a file right now because they're all just pouring in, you know, and I'm creating a file for everything, and then I can't wait to pour through all of them and just give them their due, and really exciting. Good stuff. Good news.
Yeah, so part of this, right, is I got the bug to play again, you know, because, you know, we always tell people, you know, we're just so busy and we don't get to play poker much anymore, right?
Right.
So obviously playing the restock event, they get the juices going, right? And the PPC Aruba was in town here, and side story there, Brian Alton, one of the owners of PPC Aruba, he doesn't play in his own events, but since he was up here, he saw that we were having a restock the shelves event at Derby Lane, about 30 minutes away, right?
Yeah.
So he went and played in that event and donated some food there as well. Ended up winning the event.
Oh, wow.
And because the event went late, he was late for his own event back at Tampa Bay Downs, the restock event, right? He shows up, big smile on his face with a lot of money, and he just brought in a whole pallet of rice and green beans and things like that to dig into our local center as well, too. So that was a little fun story. But
cool.
So the next day I went back and played the PPC Aruba show tournament.
Show?
Show.
Stud Hold'em Omaha?
Show.
Wow.
Yes, Stud Hold'em Omaha 8. Actually, it was Stud Hold'em Omaha, I think, and I called the poker director there a couple weeks ago when I was looking at the schedule and I thought about playing this, and I'm like, hey, is that Omaha 8? And he's like, well, if Scott Long says it's going to be Omaha 8, it's going to be Omaha 8. We didn't really say. I'm like, well, you know, it's a limit tournament. You know, it should be Omaha 8, right? No one wants to play Omaha High limit, right? So that's what it was. Yeah, one round of Stud, one round of Hold'em, one round of Omaha 8. I really expected to be the youngest person in this tournament by a factor of 7 generations, right?
Right.
Did not turn out that way. There were a ton of young, really good players in this tournament. When I say a ton, I mean percentage-wise. I mean, I think we ended up with 30 or 40 people in this thing.
Right.
But quite a bit of younger players in there. But it was fun to play. I did really well. One of the things that Tampa Bay Downs is doing now is really extending the late registration period, you know, try to get people a chance to get in and build that prize pool up. So I think this one was like 7 levels or something ridiculous like that. Ridiculous, I mean, great for people that want to get in late, right?
Right.
And 7 levels and then the break, right? So we're on break. We got 2 minutes left in break, and I'm sitting at the table getting ready to get the cards back in the air, right? And I look up, and Dr. Frankie.
Oh, yeah.
Just waltzes into the room. Yeah. Hey, Frank, how you been? I haven't seen him for a while because we haven't been able to do a home game, and I missed all the home games that you guys had done without me. And I'm chatting him up, and he's like, what are you playing? I'm like, I'm playing the show tournament. He's like, oh, man, I really wanted to play that, but I had a late appointment and couldn't get here in time. And I'm like, you still got 2 minutes to get in, buddy. And he's like, what, really? And I'm like, yeah, 2 minutes. He's like, you know what? I think I'm going to get in. I'm like, excellent. So, of course, I'm telling the dealer, hey, I need to get a kickback on that rake, you know, bring the players in at the last minute, right?
Right.
He goes, register. Of course, they seat him at my table, right? And as he's walking back over, I look up at the next blind level because, you know, we have to put the blinds out, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, Frankie has less than 10 big blinds.
Oh, man. You are cruel.
And he sits down and he's like, I'm like, hey, Frank, you know when I encourage you to get in the tournament? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, I forgot to mention that you're going to be pretty short stack right now.
Oh, man.
You can just look at his face. He's counting his chips and look at the blinds and counting his chips and look at the blinds. And he's like, well, this is going to be a quick tournament.
Man. You know, I talked to him yesterday because I was looking for some doctoral advice. And he started to tell me the story, and I was just hacking in his ear so much. He's like, oh, I'll tell you later. Now I know. He couldn't wait to tell me, too. He was like, that's Scott, man. I saw Scott at Tampa Bay Downs. And, oh, man, you were just too mean.
Give him credit, though. He milked that stack for a while. He hung in there like a champ. But I was telling him later, you know, because I walked over to you playing cash game after he got knocked out because I lasted a little longer. I ended up going out brutally, pocket kings versus ace king in the blinds.
Oh, wow.
How does that happen, right?
Wow.
Five-handed at our table. And the dude that knocked me out, like, dude, I didn't know you were that strong. I'm like, ugh! So I went out like 15. So I went over and saw him in the cash game afterwards, and we were laughing about it. And but he's like, you know, I've never played a limit tournament before. And I'm like, I know, it's really hard to find here. You'll get to play a bunch of them in Vegas at our Antioch Poker Tour event that we'll announce next week. But and I'm like, you know, the limit tournaments, I've played a lot of them now, and really what they come down to is chip management.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you got to know how to play the games, but those early stages are nothing. But then, you know, 7-8 levels into these things, you know, no one's got enough chips to really survive two hands. So you can't be splashing around at that point, and the players that splash around find themselves on the rail.
Yeah.
And very interesting.
Yeah. It's not easy.
All right. Well, the good news for all of us is we're not in jail.
That's true. Oh, I feel like I am, though. I do.
Same cannot be said for World Series of Poker bracelet winner Darren Woods, who had been sentenced to 15 months in jail, ordered to pay victims back a total of 1 million British pounds. They've already confiscated about 900,000 of that from him, which is good. That means a lot of his victims are going to get their money back.
Yeah.
But apparently this guy had created several accounts on various online sites, which allowed him, obviously, to cheat fellow players in the game. And also game affiliate programs, which was part of the sentence. So they actually attacked him from two directions. And wow, ever think a poker cheat, online poker cheat, was going to ever go to jail?
No, that was the first thing I thought of. I was glad that they did it, that they're showing that they're, well, I mean, this is over there, so it's not here, but you're at least serious about it. You know what I mean? That, you know, you're going to, they consider it stealing, and it's not. It's not cool. It's hard to believe that you can get away with that. You know, I mean, what the fact that he's playing multiple accounts and stuff coming from the same, whatever they call it over there, ISP year, but,
right.
You know, I mean, it's just weird. I can't believe that he even tried to get away with it. I mean, I don't know what the setup is, but that's pretty crazy.
Well, I think it's probably like a lot of these other online folks. They didn't think they'd ever get caught. And obviously he got caught. And the difference is he's paying the money back and going to jail, where some of these other folks that we know about, at least right now, aren't serving prison sentence. They probably lost some money.
Is that because it's regulated over there, and so there are legally things tied to it, and here it's not regulated, so they couldn't do anything?
Well, obviously this went to court, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Full Tilt stuff hasn't really gone to court yet, so that's probably the difference right now. So I don't think it has anything to do with regulating. It's just, you know, being able to build a case. And
well, I mean, like in the case of, was it Hamilton, Russ Hamilton? You know what I mean? In other words, that's not regulated. So he was cheating people. Like this guy was cheating people. With, you know, he could see the cars a different way, but he was still doing it. That's why he's not in jail, because it's not regulated here. Who's going to press charges, right?
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying. I'm getting to that point. I'm not talking about Full Tilt or Stars or anything. I'm talking about the individual people cheating. And that's why they couldn't put him in jail. That's why he's still playing poker today, and this guy's not, because it's regulated over there, I think. It's got to be the way, I think.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Yeah. I'm sad that he tried to do that, especially he's such a good player. But he doesn't need to do that.
Isn't that always the case, though?
Yeah.
That's why the Patriots are taking the air out of the ball. You know. Nixon, you know, broke into Watergate. You know, all these people that can win on their own. They're so paranoid about not being able to win. They do crazy stuff. So.
Yeah.
But I think this is good news for the poker community. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I've been telling people, is when bad people do bad things in poker, the good people in poker need to hold them accountable and make sure this stuff happens. Because it sends a message to the rest of the world that, you know, poker is not going to tolerate cheats, and this old image that we used to have that the vast majority of poker players don't share.
Absolutely.
All right, a couple of Ante Up events here. I can't believe I agreed to this, but I'm flying back to Chicago in the dead of winter.
I know.
You know, I just got back, and that was different because that was the Green Bay Packers, right?
Right.
Now I'm going back for poker. But make it worth it. Worth my while, folks. Come out and join me at the Southwest Community Services in Tinley Park, which is just outside Chicago, on Saturday, January 31st, for the Ante Up Chicago Charity Classic. It's going to be $1,100 buy-in that will be live-streamed. I will be hosting it. For more details, go to WindyCityPokerChampionship.com, and you'll also be able to watch the live stream there and probably on AntyUpMagazine.com and our Facebook page as well, too. And I think there's some side tournaments and side games as well, that too. So if $1,100 is above your head, as it is for me, still come out, and there'll be plenty of poker to play, and you can say hi to me.
Yeah, if you haven't tired of hearing Scott's voice for a complete hour today, because I'm not saying anything, why not tune in to WindyCityPokerChampionship.com and listen to him for another couple of hours?
Because you know I'm going to have such insightful analysis. Right?
I know.
Because I clearly dialed it into the mind of the $1,100 buy-in player.
That's right. And you know how to just miss the final table better than anybody. So it should be some insightful commentary.
Oh, man. And then one last reminder to help me with my American Poker Awards nominations by going to AntyUpMagazine.com/nominate to submit a form of your choices. I haven't got a lot of feedback from folks on this. So, again, a reminder, this is the entire AntyUp Nation's opportunity to influence the American Poker Awards. So if you don't go to the nominate page and let me know what you're thinking, I can't consider those for our nominations. So please go do that soon, as I got to turn my nominations in no later than February 1st. So,
are we going to reveal how we voted and stuff? We're not going to do that, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's something you and I need to talk about. I mean, part of it is that, you know, Alex Dreyfus here is very big on transparency. I don't know whether he's going to release individual. No, I doubt it will. But that's kind of his thing. Is the problem with other awards is that there's been a lot of Wizard of Oz, man behind the curtain kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So part of me says that it should be transparent and let people know what we did. Obviously, you know, there's business considerations for us too that we need to consider. But yeah, you and I will talk about it. If we think we can do it responsibly, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people like Poker Radius are chatting us up, and they're wondering if we're going to nominate certain people or women for certain things, stuff like that. And I just wondered if we were going to actually tell people what you did. Yeah, that's something to talk about. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. This is Jerry. He wants to know, he says he prefers playing poker online rather than live. So he wants to know if we can give him any advice on how to set up real play on the internet.
Yeah, I had to... I had to make him cry a couple months ago when he sent me this email, but because I told him, I mean, obviously you can. It's easy to do. Unfortunately, there's just not a lot of American, and he lives in Indiana, I believe. There's not a lot of American-facing or U.S.-facing real money sites left out there. There's a couple. And, of course, there's challenges with them. You know, most of them have been shut down by the U.S. government. And the ones that are remaining somehow have escaped the noose, but you never know when that's going to happen next. It's been a while since the government's got involved in this, so maybe they made their statement, but you never know.
Yeah, you never
know. Could be the day that they decide to shut down your site. So, and if they do shut it down, then whatever money you had on there is gone. So, you know, go into it knowing that. And also go into it knowing that the sites may not be regulated as well, obviously, as well as the ones in New Jersey, Nevada, and Delaware. And so it is the Wild Wild West, which we've always said from the beginning. So just keep that in mind. But it's not easy to do it these days. It used to be really easy. Now, you do have the other options of subscription-based sites, which are legal in 35 states, I think, somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, where you can pay a monthly fee and play as much as you want and win prizes. So that's an option as well, too. That's probably a little safer, but maybe not the same experience that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And then aside from that, remember, we got some great online tournaments. You can't win money, but you can have a lot of fun playing in our Papes events every day that ends in a 6. We do PokerStars home game software for that, completely free and just for fun. And then remember, we've also partnered up with Advanced Poker Training to co-brand their tournament series every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. And you can play there, and there are some prizes involved in that as well, too. So probably not the same as what Jerry's looking for, but those are some safer options. But if you do want to, you know, log on to an online account, it's still technically possible to do.
Right.
Just be careful.
Yeah, just be careful. All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from our good friend Jimmy Fulton. He says he's in a tournament at a local casino. A player was on penalty for showing his cards. He was sitting at an empty table, one table over, and on the last hand of his penalty, the dealer tried to get his attention. At the completion of the hand, she tried again and begins dealing. She finished dealing, then again tried to get his attention. I said it didn't matter since he wasn't in his seat and his hand should be dead. The dealer told me that since he was on penalty, she has to let him have a chance to look at his cards. She tries again, and he decides he wants to play. He immediately raised, and when I shoved, he called and busted me from the tournament. Was what the dealer told me the correct ruling? In my opinion, since she tried repeatedly to get his attention, his hand should have been dead for not being at the table.
Sam says, this all depends on the house rules of the poker room that you play in. I think the dealer definitely did her best to notify the gentleman that his penalty time was over. This was a situation where, as a player, I would request the floor to see, indeed, if the house rule does allow him to act on his hand, even though he wasn't at the table when the cards were dealt. It would have eliminated any doubt to the matter, and you wouldn't feel like you're knocked out by a player who shouldn't have had a hand.
Yeah. I agree with this because... you have to be able to alert the guy when the penalty is over. And maybe she was soft-spoken. Maybe he couldn't hear her. Maybe whatever. Maybe someone should have got up and tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, she could have asked the player to walk over there and get him. She could have called the floor to get him, whatever. But because there's no way for him to know when his penalty is over until he's notified, because he's not supposed to be at the table, I think I have to agree with this. I think I understand why he's upset. You know, he got knocked out, and it feels like every other moment where... you know, if you're not at the table, you're not supposed to get cards, you're not supposed to have a hand, but this is a different thing. She needs to get his attention before she deals that hand. She needs to say, hey, you need to come back now. It'd be one thing if he's aware of it, and then he doesn't, that's different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think this is a tough one, because obviously it sounds like, and I had to edit this email down, but she went to great lengths to get this guy's attention and just couldn't do it. But the problem is, obviously, when you are on penalty, you can't serve it at the table, and in most rooms, you're not even allowed to stand right behind the table. You got to be like another table away. You know, you can't be around the action.
Right.
Which makes sense, because you're on penalty, and part of the penalty is not being able to follow the action. You lose the entire round of poker, not just the actual playing of it, but the observation that you would get from being at the table, right?
Right.
So then the problem comes in, if you can't be at the table, and you can't be around the table in the penalty, and you got to be somewhere else, what's the best way to notify you when the penalty is over? And generally, when I've seen this, you know, the dealer, you know, lets them know how many hands are out. You know, they have a little button there so you can see it. Obviously, you can follow the button. And generally, I think a dealer will recommend, hey, you've got to be away from the table, but, you know, keep your eye from a distance. And you can see the button from 3 or 4 tables away, right?
Right.
So it really is dependent on the player to do that. But I wonder if a better solution here would have been, rather than her dealing the cards, would be to call the floor and stop the action.
Yeah.
And have the floor come over and say, hey, I'm trying to get this guy's attention. What should I do?
Yeah.
And as Sam says, that would have obviously eliminated the doubt, but also it would have given a really good opportunity for them to get the player and bring them back over without. Because once you start dealing the cards, then it gets weird, you know, because poker TDA rules are, you know, first card off, you're out. You can't play that hand.
Yeah.
But... unfortunately, again, this is one of those, as Sam said, this is a house rule thing. So, you know, if you're looking for consistency in it, good luck. So,
yeah, yep.
Best thing to do is just ask about it.
Hey, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. We're going to refresh our memories now with part 1.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're at another soft seat, a 1-2 No Limit Hold'em cash game, and again, we're one of the best players in this game. We've already busted out once, however, when we got it all in pre-flop with aces and king-queen hit two pair on us. We've rebought and currently sit with $194 in chips. The blinds post, under the gun folds, and we're in the plus one with the king of hearts, king of diamonds. There's no way we're getting tricky here. We do our standard raise to $8 and get called by the hijack, cutoff, and big blind. Ugh. There's about $30 in the pot, and the flop comes down the 8 of spades, 7 of spades, 4 of diamonds. This flop brings some danger with it, and we get a little more aggravated when the big blind leads out for $27. I think a raise is in order here. Our hand is too strong to fold, and calling just won't get us any information. We make it $65 to go. Out of nowhere, the hijack shoves for her remaining 190. She's loose and passive, and has even tried to flirt her way to getting players to fold occasionally. However, this time she's sitting stone-faced, not saying a word. She also has us covered. Interesting that she comes alive now. The cutoff and big blind both fold, and it's on us.
Well, I really wish I could find That's something complicated here, but this seems like an easy fold, no?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know about easy, but I think so.
I mean, in a tournament, you have to be a little more risky, but in a cash game, especially 1-2, I think I'm content to play ABC poker to a profit here, and I don't think calling off all my stack with an overpair to a wet board to a player who re-raised a donk better. Look at all those
words
I threw in
there. You're like one of the kids now.
Exactly. I don't think that doesn't seem very smart to me.
Well, maybe there's a secret code embedded here, since he told us the woman is loose and flirty.
Trying to crack the enigma.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise I can't see a reason for mentioning that. I say if he's looking for a date, he should fold. If he's looking to take her money, well, then fold still, but at least we know he's thinking with the right head. That's what I have to say.
Oh, I love it. You're on the right back. You remember that that craptastic show, what was it, The Turn? With the Matador guy?
Oh, no, that was Tilt.
Tilt, yeah, Tilt.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the one scene with the woman that everybody said was based off of Jennifer Harmon, right?
Right.
And the guy, you know, raised and then dumped a stack to her and then said, hey, let me get some money and we'll go on our date. And she's like, I ain't going on a date with you. You played me. Of course I did. It's poker.
Oh, man.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Well, here we go. Here's see what happens.
Hello again. We're either way ahead or way behind. That classic situation. I'm not sure what to think here. What would she have called our preflop raise with? She was the first to call it, so it's not like she threw $8 in because she was getting great odds. Maybe she has an overpair to the board and is just banking on the fact that we missed on a big ace, or that we have some sort of flush draw. 6-5 just doesn't make sense here. Could she maybe have some kind of draw herself? Spades, maybe? Spades with two overs? I'm just not sure I can fold this hand here. But if we call and lose, we're down 400 for the session. Ultimately, I can't see a hand she could have that would beat us. We call. Our opponent turns over fours. Oh, a set. Great. The turn pairs the board, and the river offers us no help. We're forced to rebuy. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying baby sets do happen. That's why it's important to pay attention to all the players in the hand. I was so focused on the big blind here, I had forgotten all about the hijack. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, I appreciate O'Malley's thought process, but for me, this comes down to just smart stack management. I think it's impossible to figure out a range where I'm comfortable calling off my entire stack this late. And that's why it was an easy fold for me. You know, if somebody wants to abuse me for doing that, they'll find that at one time I will have a major stronger hand, and it'll make it worth it.
Well, you know, losing $200 on this hand is way cheaper than folding and asking her out on a date. So, I guess it's okay that you lost his hand, because if you had folded and asked around, she said yes, you'd have been broke. So, but it does make sense, set of fours. I mean, that's, you know, you limp, or you call a minimum raise and, you know, hit your set and go with it. So, yeah.
Well, that's just, it's such a tough board, right? Because you got the spades, you got straights, you know, and we got an overpayer. I mean, I've been emailing back and forth with another one of our listeners. I think it might be a hand of the week at some point, too. About the danger of just getting married to these overpairs. You know, you get so excited when you look down and you see aces, kings, or queens pre-flop, and then you got to realize that, you know, they're just a single pair. I mean, they're a really super strong pair, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But, you know, when the flop comes out, there's action and stuff. You know, this is not a board you want to see with kings, particularly not with the king of spades not in your hand. And, you know, you got a lot of danger. You got the sets. You could have something with a flop straight. And even if not, even if you're ahead and you got on a flush draw here, then you're still vulnerable there. I mean, obviously, depending on what you bet, you're getting proper value whether that you lose the hand or not. But, you know, again, it's 1-2. I think the way to play 1-2, I know it's boring for people, but, you know, save your Hollywooding and your crazy moves for tournaments. And 1-2, just sit there and let other people do that stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just chips up.
Just make your money and go home.
Hey, this is AJ Benzing.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gallen.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Reamer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe. This is Paul Wapika.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Dora Brunson, and you're listening to Antia.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at Antia Magazine. com. And I think we got a situation this week from our good friend Cecil Young. Came on one of our cruises not too long ago. Fun guy.
Yep.
And I always love an email that starts with, I had a senior moment in the recent charity poker tournament. all right. So it looks like it's, I'm just going to read the whole thing. It's kind of short. So I think it's a situation. He says, at level 2, which is 5,100, pre-flop, there are two limps to me at under the gun plus 3. With queen. Uh-oh. Sounds like an O'Malley hand, right?
Yeah.
I limped to see how many in a hand. One more called, and the big blind check.
Wow, we limped with queen, and all those callers?
Yeah. See, it's almost just like this is what I was just talking about, right? I totally forgot this was... I put this on the show this week, but this is exactly the hand I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
Flop comes 10-8 deuce with two spades. Big blind opens with 600. A couple folds, and I called after throwing what I thought was a 500 and 100 chips in. The dealer called 5,100. What? I reflexively said no, but was rightly told to raise stood.
Hey, this is Scott Long, Poker 101. I mean, really, if you say call, you don't have to worry about any of this.
Exactly.
State absolutely what you want to do.
Don't be shy at the table.
Yeah.
Let's see, the player being between us and the big blind folds. The big blind stares at me, noting my aggravation, and shoves. We both started close to the 13,000 starting stack. I tanked for a couple minutes before stating, I'll pay for my mistake, and folded.
Oh.
At the time, I figured it was the right thing, but later I realized I had accidentally done what I should have done and should have called the all-in, also noting the rebuy option. But what are your thoughts? We discussed the hand later, and the big blind had 10-jack.
Okay, so at the beginning of this, he said, I had a senior moment. I think that's wrong. I think he had multiple senior moments here. I mean, first, limping under the gun plus 3 with queen after he had a couple of limpers already.
Yeah.
One, that, what are you doing? Then the next senior moment is the, you know, not calling verbally, if you wanted to call. But I would not call there anyway.
Which is what he admitted. You know,
yeah.
He got forced into doing what he should have done, although probably.
And then you've got 5,100 in there, and he only had 13,000 to start, and the guy shoves, and you fold? What are you behind on? I mean, this isn't the O'Malley's move where.
Yeah, it's a different story, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not. Yeah, it's two spades, but this board is not completely wet. It's not three to a straight on the board already. But I can't. And it's a rebuy tournament on top of it if you were going to use that option if you needed it. There's no way I fold that much money thrown in the middle and have an overpair to that board. There's no way. I mean, I know it's a little wet because of the spades and the 10 and the 8, but come on. Yeah, I mean, I think he made at least three mistakes on that hand.
Yeah, and this is a different story for a lot of reasons than the O'Malley here. You know, had we played this properly, I would probably say at some point we could get away from this, depending on what the turn and river were. Obviously, we did not play it properly, and any stretch of it was she's lost. Already knows, right? But once we made the mistake and went to 5,100, at that point, that changes this entire complexion of this hand.
Yeah, me too.
Because, yeah, obviously, we could be up against a set. You know, there's no straight here like there was in the O'Malley. But at that point, really, what seems to be happening here is the big blind realizing we made this mistake and was trying to take advantage of it. And a lot of players will do what Cecil did. I think they're in fold because they're like, oh my gosh, I meant to put 600 in. If I meant to call, right? Obviously, right. You can't have a hand that you're happy with, right?
Right.
You should have been happy with their hand here.
Right.
And now you get 5,100 in here. As a player, I think you got to go for the jugular here and say, oh, absolutely. I'm going to make you pay for this one way or the other. And the fact that the big blind made the original bid, he obviously has something, I would think, right?
Yeah.
I guess he could be bluffing on this board, but that seems unlikely with the way it is. So he has something. Now you've got, you know, you're trying to get 600 out of the guy. Now you got 5,100 trapped in there? Absolutely, I'm going all in. And so, I mean, if we really had nothing, if we were on a spade draw here or something like that, that might be a different story. But, you know, we got an overpair here. So I think at that point, you got to commit. And if you're wrong, you're right. You got that rebuy. There's so many reasons here not to fold now.
Yeah. I one of the things, too, is that if I had a hand that was worthy of calling that 51 instead of 5,100, it was the 600, then I can't have any hand that I would fold after making that mistake now. I mean, there's just not one hand that I would fold.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because if I had the spades, I still would call if I had two spades in my hand. Especially if I had something like a queen, jack of spades, which would give me a gutter two, or queen, king of spades. You know, anything that two overs or one over spade, you know, so I can make that pair, which might beat somebody who has something like jacks. I just can't imagine if I had any kind of hand that was worth calling with and then I made that mistake of 5,100. Then I can't imagine folding for any price, really, at that point, after I've made that bet.
All right, let me ask you something, because I know we're probably going to disagree on this, but
okay.
Maybe not. If the rebuy option is not there, this is a freeze-out. Same decision?
I think so, because, one, I do have queen-queen. I mean, are you talking about all the hands I said, or are you talking about just now?
Yeah, I guess that's the kind of discussion. Well, queen-queen, it's really hard for me to get away from this, but if you had a weaker hand...
Yeah, a weaker hand.
And there was no rebuy.
Yeah, if I had like 9, 10...
You still feel like you're committed here.
If I had like 9, 10, I'm not sure. I take the rebuy option out of it. 9, 10, something like that, I might fold. Mm-hmm. Because I'm the kicker. I'm behind the kicker. You know, guy could have ace 10. He could have...
Sure, yeah.
You know, whatever. But if maybe two spades with one over, I still probably call. Because you know me, I like to shove on a draw sometimes just getting everybody out. And if not, I have that backup, especially in a rebuy. But if the rebuy's not there, I might. That's a huge pot. I mean, really, you started with 13, and there's almost 13 in the middle already. You know?
And I guess this is why I bring this up, because, and I'm not really sold on what I would do, but we're at level 2, 5,100, right?
Yeah.
And so we sacrificed a 5,100. We still have 8,000 in our stack, right?
Yeah.
It's a ton of tournaments out there that you don't even start with 8,000 units at 5,100 levels, right?
Right.
It's still plenty, plenty, plenty of play at that point. So, you know, I think that becomes this classic, you know, do you compound one mistake by making another one situation. The fact that we had the rebuy option and we have queens, all that stuff adds up to where it's almost ridiculous for me to fold. But you take away the rebuy option where I'm out of this tournament, and make my hand a little less strong, at that point, I'm not so insistent on making what could be a second mistake to counteract the first mistake. I still have plenty of chips left to come back. And this isn't even one of my normal tight folds that I'm known for. This is, you know, 8,000 units.
Right. I mean, essentially, I have 80 big blinds. You know, you have 80 big blinds.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it stings. to make that mistake and lose that. Don't get me wrong, but it's early in the tournament. You got plenty of time to dig that bag. It's not like you're leaving yourself with 1,000 at 5,100 and only right. 10 big blinds.
Right. I don't necessarily disagree with you. The problem here was, I think the way it came down, you have to think like a poker player too. This guy, like you said, was exposing us for, because of how quickly he said, no, I didn't mean to do that. Then, you know, if it seemed sincere, which it was, this guy thinks you don't have a strong hand, then he's going to shove to get that 5,100 out of you, thinking that you're weak. And even if you're, even if he's, you know, even if you call him, he thinks he's ahead because he's got top pair, and he thinks that you were just calling because you didn't really have a hand. So either, you know, you're going to have to fold because you really didn't have a hand, like you might have had an eight. Or, you know what I mean, unless you're one of those guys that are trying to pretend that, like, you don't have a good hand, you overbet like that. You know what I mean? Some guys try that, but...
Yeah, that does the other thing I was going to bring up is that it's tough because as a normal player, when you throw in 5,100, you mean to throw in 600.
Right.
You know, instinctively, you're going to be like, horror, right? There's just no way around it. If you're a better player or a better actor, I think the proper response to this would be kind of a sly smile.
Right.
Like, oops, and try to put that doubt in the big blind's mind that you did this intentionally, and therefore he doesn't take advantage. He thinks twice about taking advantage of you. Probably still will, but thinks twice about it. Because we used to have those games all the time. You know the rules where, you know, if you take your stack over the line that it's in, right?
Right.
And you have all these ass clowns that would pick up their stack with pocket aces and move it across the line and drop one chip in and then pull it back. And the dealer said, oh, no, hey, that's all in. Oh, no, really? I bit the call. And then somebody goes, all right, I'm going to take advantage of you. And then you turn over the aces and go, I gotcha. I hate that.
Yeah.
And that could happen here. But if you're selling it that way, you know, obviously Cecil didn't sell it here. As most of us wouldn't, we'd be horrified. You know, we'd try to call 600 and put 5,100 in instead.
And the way he said it, that he reflexively did it, I mean, it seems to me that it was an honest, you know, the way he said it, it would seem to me that it would feel at the table like it was an honest mistake.
Right.
And so now this guy is convinced that he has the best hand and that there's 5,100 out there for the taking, because even if this guy chooses to call my all in, I got to be ahead of him. So why not make this move? And it is not a bad move, really, if he believed it was sincere and the guy really was behind. So, you know, I can't fold there. I just can't, because of all those things that this guy would have to think he's ahead of us with whatever he had. And there's no way he's got king there, because there's no raise.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have jack probably, and he doesn't have a set probably, because, well, I mean, he might have a set, but it just seems.
Yes, that's always possible.
Yeah, but that just doesn't seem right either, but yeah.
The other thing, too, is that you know this is a charity poker tournament, right?
Right.
Because you're starting with 13,000 units, and you have a 5,000-unit chip on the table already.
Yeah.
You know, no tournament would ever start you with a 5,000-unit. That's almost it's more than a third of your stack in one chip right there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have a couple quarters and some hundreds and then thousands to fill it out. So that's the other problem with this, I think, but... you know, you introduce those 5,000 units, you know, on a color up later on, but
yeah.
If that's the case, so you need to be. The other thing is, he's only got one of these too, right? It's not like he has two 5,000 unit chips in the stack too. Boy, that's just so unfortunate. So, yeah, you know,
it's tough.
You totally Green Bay Packer to this situation.
All right, I'm sorry that I was sick today and didn't. Contribute as much as I could. Hopefully I'll be better by next week. Next week we're going to record our show on a Friday as well, so it might be posted a little later on Friday. Don't worry, the streak's not over. We will be taping. So I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.